If you pronounce my name again, it's Suparna Bhattacharya. I work with IBM Linux Technology Center, and I'm based in India in the IBM India Software Labs in Delhi. Within the LTC, one of my focus areas is RAS, that is reliability, availability, and serviceability. Basically, making Linux easier to maintain, easier to more reliable in production environments for people. And if there is a problem, then the fastest and most efficient way to fix it. So it's trying to make Linux better so that it's more customers can have much greater faith in it, that if there is some problem, if something comes up, then it can be fixed very fast. Dynamic probes is one of the tools, one of the patches that we have in this area. And it was the first project that we started off with in the RAS area. And it's been out in the community for some time. We made our first code drop in August 2000. So it's been something like 2.5 years now since that time. So this talk was meant to be an update and discuss some of the work in progress on dynamic probes as such. But since I think it's a new topic and not many people will be familiar with it, I'll try to spend a little more time on the background stuff, and maybe for more details you could probably look at the paper for more of the specific details. So what I would start with is firstly explain the topic, why debugging by stealth. Dynamic probes is a debugging facility, but it's not meant for use by developers. It is not primarily meant for use by developers on their own systems. It is meant for use on live systems, on production systems, where you typically cannot afford to bring a system down where even if you bring it down, it has to be for a very little time. So it's called called this debugging by stealth because it happens with minimum system interference, so you hardly know that it is there, that it is actually debugging for you. So I'll explain a little bit on why we started with this project and what dynamic probes is about. Then some of the background stuff on what we mean by a probe point, what exactly is a probe point, how do you specify a particular probe point, and a little bit of detail on the probe mechanism itself. Try to explain some of the technical issues that we face and in what ways this is different from a typical debugger or a trace facility. In some ways, you can think of it as something in between a debugger and a trace facility. It has capabilities of both these things. After that, I'll talk about the patch organization. One of the major changes that has happened recently in the dynamic probe area is that we had a much bigger functioning patch for the 2.4 kernel, and we had a user space utility to go with it. Now, when we tried to port it to 2.5, Rusty Russell suggested that we tried. He said, this is a very big thing. It's a useful thing, but it's a very big thing. So can you instead break it up into smaller patches and abstract the very minimal parts of it, the core parts of it, into a small patch? So after doing that, I feel that it's a very nice way of organizing things, and it's a easy way to explain what it is about. So after covering the fundamentals, I'll be talking about each of these incremental series of patches. And then I'll move on and give a brief vision or a picture of how the overall deprobes thing, which is actually much bigger than all these patches, how that looks like and how that could be used. So I'll try to give some examples of how it has been used in the past and some ideas on how it could be used even for developers, even though it was not meant for used by developers, but more for a production environment. And then I'll just briefly talk about some of the work in progress, which is really not much. So what is deprobes? It's basically an automated debugger in a way. It's meant for use in a production system, so that's why we say operates in extreme conditions. You can put, if you're using a typical debugger, it's an interactive thing. So you can't, if you employ a kernel debugger on a live system, it means essentially you're bringing it down. If you, say for example, you're trying to debug an interrupt handler, you want to put a breakpoint in an interrupt handler, you can't quite do that with an interactive debugger. So these are some of the things which vTroops can help with. Or supposing you're trying to debug the memory management subsystem and you need to put breakpoints in the page fault handler. Again, having an automated breakpoint system helps there. It is SMC capable. It doesn't, when you hit a breakpoint, it doesn't actually break. And that's why we make the distinction and say probe point versus a breakpoint. It's more like a trace facility, but in the case of a trace facility, what happens is that you actually have to go and insert statements within the kernel code to invoke the trace. So it's not customizable. You actually need to have the trace points predefined within the code. And it tends to clutter the code if you have lots of trace points pre-compiled in. While with dynamic probes, you can dynamically, while the kernel is running, go and specify a set of dynamic trace points. We say it's universal because it's not only for kernel. It's the first series of patches that we had was for putting probes in the kernel, but you can put it on user modules as well. So you can put it on user space code, you can put it on shared libraries, you can have it in, as I said, within the kernel, you can have it running in interrupt context or in task context. So it really doesn't rely on a lot of the system to be operational. It relies on very minimal things, and it disturbs the system minimally. We also have something called, we make use of the processor watch point mechanism, so we can have probes on address accesses. So not just on code locations as such, but also when you try to access a given data structure, for example, you might say, let a probe hit occur and let me do something there. So essentially the mechanism is that you have a probe point or a breakpoint, and when that hits, then you can specify a small tiny callback kind of a routine which executes at that point and then proceeds. So it's in some way similar to a conditional debugging kind of setup, except that it is designed specifically for non-interactive purposes. So it doesn't really, even if you do, say, for example, put a conditional breakpoint, you would end up having the debugger stop at that point, evaluate the condition, and then carry on. But here, you never have it actually stop. You don't stop the system from that. And as I will try to explain later, there's a very low system overhead of defining probes. Even when you're doing user space probes, you really have a very little cost in terms of memory overhead as well. Why we started this is that this was something which was there in OS2, I think, from around 1994. So it's been used by in service situations by people doing support for OS2. It's being used to debug very elusive kind of problems, the kind of problems that where it's not that when you say you get a crash or you see something, it's not the cause at that moment that caused it, but it is maybe, as you've been hearing in some of the earlier talks, it may be some 2000 statements back something happened which actually causes a crash at this point of time. So it's been used for debugging those kinds of systems on live production environments, and it has been used very successfully there. Other thing is that it's not instead of a kernel debugger. It's something which enables other RAS facilities. You can say put a probe point, and this callback can evaluate situations, and when desired, it can actually, if you say you want to take a dump, it can trigger a crash dump. Or it could go and say that, okay, now things are so bad that I really want to go and analyze it with KDB if these kind of conditions happen. So in that case, it can trigger KDB as such. Or, as I said, it could be used for doing tracing as such. So you can make use of, say, you have LTT compiled in the kernel, you can just put a probe point anywhere you like, and you say that when the probe hits, then log a trace record to LTT. So you don't need to actually put the trace statement physically in the kernel to do that. So you can do a lot of ad hoc stuff using this. And to explain that a little more, when I say dynamic, complex assertion checking. Assertion checking, typically in those situations, you always try to go to the first point of failure. You don't look at the end symptoms, but you try to catch it as early as possible. So typically what you do is that if you've seen debug kernels, you would find a lot of assertion statements in them. So whenever some parameter that you get to a function is, doesn't sound right, it's not what you expected, you trigger an assertion, and that assertion might trigger a dump or break into KDB at that point of time. What you can do with dprobes is that you can do this assertion checking dynamically. So if you're in a system and you suspect that something is going wrong, then you can put in a dynamic assertion check and then just trigger a non-disruptive dump at that point of time and let the system carry on. So if the failure happens later on, you still have something back from that point of time which you can use to analyze it. Okay, so what is a probe point? I mean, it's basically the same, very similar to a breakpoint in a debugger. There are typically two ways of implementing breakpoints. One is by the instruction replacement scheme, where you have almost every architecture provides some kind of breakpoint instruction. So what you do is that the particular code instruction where you want to break, you replace that with the breakpoint instruction. So that's on an Intel system, that could be IN3. On S390 system, it could be SVC255, which takes up 2 bytes. And then so what happens is when that instruction executes, it generates an exception. And that gives you control. And that is where you call the probe handler. So these probe points can be unlimited in number, because it's just location specific. So you can have any number of probe points without a problem. It generalizes across platforms. All of platforms have a more or less uniform mechanism for this. It is specific to a module. It is specific to the particular code that you are debugging. It's not virtual address specific, so to say. There is one problem with this, in that in order to actually continue past a breakpoint, you need to replace the original instruction back, single step it, and then put back the breakpoint. Now, in that gap, there is an opportunity for a probe to be missed on other CPUs. I'll be talking a little more about that later on. Coming to hardware watch points, this is an alternate mechanism. Typically, processors would provide some kind of registers, debug registers on Intel, where you can program and say that this is the place where you want to break. It could be whenever this address is accessed or executed, then it should break. It should cause an exception. Now, and the advantage of this is that in this case, when you continue, you really don't need to put back the original instruction, because you never change the original instruction. The processor knows that it has to break at this point. The major problem with this technique is that these number of debug registers are typically very limited. On Intel, you have got 4 debug registers, and PowerPC, it's even less. The watch point mechanism is kind of different across different platforms. So it's not very easy to generalize. And in this case, when you specify that break at this, you normally say a particular virtual address that it should break at. Or on 390, you could specify it by a physical address. So when we implemented dprobe, we used instruction replacement as the primary mechanism for breakpointing, even though we added watch point support later on. And watch point support is intended to be used more as for doing data kind of breakpoints, so that you can profile specific kernel data structures in that, using that mechanism. So this is just a pictorial view of various ways in which you can specify a probe point. If you look at GDB, or it makes use of ptrace, so in this case, the breakpoints are per process. So if you have 10 instances of a program, then you actually are debugging only one instance of that. Or if you have a shared library module, then you would have a probe only in that instance. What it does is that it uses the same technique. It inserts a breakpoint instruction there. And because it is writing to a code page, it causes a copy and write. So you have a separate copy of the particular page for that particular that process, while all other processes which are running the same shared code are not affected. So this has its advantages, but another way of doing the same thing would be to make this per module, where all this I'm talking about is more relevant for user space probes as such. So when you do it per module, then what you're saying is really, I have this executable program or I have this shared library, and this much offset into that is the location of the place where I want to put the probe. This is a kind of a global indication. So if you have, say, a program, 10 instances of the program, then you want you have the probe active in all of the instances. Or if you have a shared library, for example, you have the probe active in all instances of all programs which are using that shared library. So this gives you a way to track all calls to a given function within a shared library. So DeepProbe makes use of this for its user space part of Probe. So the way in which you identify probes here is by an inode and offset combination. Or what we do is another way of specifying probe, and the most common way is by virtual address, where you just say that this is a virtual storage address, and this is where the probe point is located. But that fits very well with kernel space probes, because everything is mapped in the Linux kernel. Everything is, kernel address space is all virtually mapped, and it's all the same across all process contexts. So this is what kernel debuggers would use, and this is what kprobes also uses. Or another way might be doing it by physical address as well. Okay. So this is just a diagram of how the probe components look like. This example is more tuned to Intel architecture. So TRAP3 is the exception that is generated when you have a breakpoint. That's the in3 instruction. And TRAP1 is the single-step instruction. So what happens is that when the exception happens, then it calls the DPEH, which is the DeepProbe Event Handler. And DeepProbe Event Handler actually takes care of the core breakpointing mechanism. And then it calls the callback function, which you might have registered. So this is the callback, which is the, we call it the pre-handler, because it is called before the instruction is actually executed. So it is after the breakpoint, but before the probe instruction is executed. And then you can have a post-handler, which will be executed after the probe instruction is executed. And this is typically optional. And the probes are, there are a data structure that is managing the probe, is called the probe object. And what you would have is you might have insert a kernel module, which has probing routines, and which will actually register probes at particular addresses that you want to, and say that this is the callback that should be called at that time. A bit more on the probing mechanism. As I said, we are using the breakpointing scheme. So it's instruction replacement kind of breakpointing mechanism. So when you place a probe, and then when that particular code executes, then an exception is generated. So the exception over here is the TRAP3 exception. Again, this whole picture over here is taking Intel as an example. And by trying to go through this, I'll try to bring out some of the subtle issues that come up as a result of this not being a regular interactive debugger, but a non-interactive or automated debugger. When the exception happens, then the DeepProbe event handler needs to find out what was the probe which actually got hit at this point of time. And then once it is able to find that out, then it can call the corresponding callback routine. Once that is done, then it goes through the process of, it needs to actually execute the routine, execute the instruction. Probe handling is over. Now you need to continue with processing. So in order to do this, what it would do is it would put back the original instruction. It would set up things so that a single step exception would occur as soon when this completes. So what it does is you set up the trap flag in the E flags register in the case of Intel. So that means that when after you do an IRET from the exception, then it would execute, it would set, have the single stepping bit set, so it would trap right after executing the probe instruction. So when this trap happens, which is trap 1 here in Intel, that is the point of time that you actually would go back and reinstate the breakpoint and continue. Now there is a concept of a log buffer here. So when the probe handler itself might be writing to some log data or some kind of thing like that, or it might be saving data. Now what we want is that sometimes what happens is there are some instructions which get restarted which might themselves, when executing, cause an exception. For example, an instruction which causes a page fault. Now, this instruction might actually be restarted multiple times. Now, we don't want a log to be generated every time it happens. So in those, that is why we actually do the committing of the log after the instruction, the single step instruction, has completed. So committing a log could, for example, involve calling a trace facility and saying, okay, please, sending a trace record to a particular trace facility. Or it could mean just doing a simple print key, in which case it will go to a syslog. Now, there is a possibility. How do we deal with the possibility of recursion? All this while this is happening, we have interrupts disabled. So, in fact, what we did was we changed the interrupt gray gates in Intel to the trap 3 and trap 1 have been changed to interrupt gates instead of exception. So what happens is that we have interrupt disabled all through. As a result of that, it means that you cannot have an interrupt coming in at the same time and that having a probe in it and resulting in it. So as a result of that, you don't have recursion due to any interrupts happening. So recursion can only happen if we happen to have something in the probe handler itself is calling some code which has got a probe in it. So that is something which we typically try to disallow. And if that happens, then we silently remove the probe. There's another effect of this instruction disablement. I mean, you could have thought that, okay, supposing we leave interrupts enabled and we let a probe point be hit, what would happen is that you would end up with a reverse ordering of execution of the probes. While in this case, we are always sure that on the same CPU, the probed instructions will always execute in the order in which they happened, which is a rather important thing when you're trying to debug a system. You want to be as close as possible to the real behavior. SMP serialization, since we are not stopping all the other CPUs when the probe hit happens, so we have some kind of serialization so that if there's a probe hit on another CPU at the same time, then how does it, the data structures need to be protected. So we have a locking scheme for that. We had a much more granular locking scheme in our full-blown deprobe implementation, which was per probe specific, while when we moved to the kernel probes implementation in 2.5, we made it, it's less granular. It's now simplified, basically, and less granular. So it doesn't really matter too much because it's unlikely that you'll have multiple probe hits going on at the same time on other CPUs. The SMP probe misses window. I hope that the picture is a little clearer now why there's a possibility of a probe miss on other CPUs, because this phase of time when we are single-stepping the original instruction, then there could be there's a space of time when there is no breakpoint at that location. So if that code executes another CPU, the probe could be missed. Now, one of the things that we do, one of the optimizations that we try to do is that in some situations, very simple instructions like no-op or CLD, we try to emulate the instruction. This phases on this second trap, the single-step trap. Oh, I saw. Okay. Yeah, so this is the window of probe miss occurrence because the original instruction is there and there is no probe point at that point during that time. So, and what I was saying is that in some situations what we do is we try to, instead of actually executing the instruction in place, we try to emulate the instruction. And this can be done for only very simple instructions. But for example, if you have a probe on a no-op, then it will be much more efficient than a probe on a regular instruction. Because in that case, we emulate the instruction, so we don't really need to do all this thing of replacing or setting up single step and the resulting single step trap happening. Okay. But even in that case, basically after emulation is completed, then we commit the log. And reinstation of the breakpoint is not really necessary in the case of emulation because it's already there. It's only in the other case that we need to put it back because we removed it. Now what happens is, as I was saying, is that if you have, supposing as you're trying to execute the instruction, it causes another trap, then there are some situations where we would, and it's a recoverable exception, then we might just discard the log there and put back the breakpoint, and when the instruction restarts again, then it would again cause a break and go through the whole cycle again. There is another such a race that comes up here, which is not called by us. It is known as a zombie breakpoint problem because you can remove a probe, so it's possible that a probe hit has caused an exception, and at the same time you have somewhere else we are trying to dynamically remove the probe point. Now, no amount of locking can actually help you there, because you could have the trap generated, and before you get to actually take any logs or anything, at that point of time, you are not yet taken any logs, and yet the probe point might be removed on another CPU. So the way some debuggers would handle such situations is that they would keep around a zombie breakpoint structure for some time, and the probe removal logic would actually go and mark the probe as disabled at that time. And it's only after a point of time when you know that all CPUs have gone through that, and then you go remove the breakpoint. You go and remove the data structure as such. We've taken a simpler approach because what we do is that when we hit the when we actually come across a breakpoint and we have a probe hit and we don't find it in this hash table that I was talking about, then it goes and checks and looks at the instruction itself and sees, is there a breakpoint instruction still here? If not, then okay, then the probe has gone, so we can just forget it. So it uses that approach to deal with this problem. The SMP misses problem is something which we are trying, is one of the areas that we still have in the work in progress. It's not a major thing, a major problem that you face typically in a practical situation as you're trying to debug races, because code is itself serialized. I mean, if you're trying to debug race kind of situation, typically the code is serialized anyway, so you don't typically have the same code path being hit. So this is a probe patch organization, as I was saying in the beginning. When we had it on 2.4, we had a big patch with lots of functions. It's something like 171K if we even consider the common part. And DPROBE has been ported to other architectures, been ported to PowerPC and S390 and the 64-bit versions of each. And we had this user space thing, which was the DPROBE's command line, and we had also a way which used to take something which we call RPN-based program. It's just similar to Java bytecode, the way you express the probe routine as such, and we had a compiler to be able to, with a C-like interface to that. So all this is all there, but when we did it for 2.5 and the genesis of the idea of this goes to Rusty Russell for suggesting it. What we did on 2.4 is that we knew that this whole thing can't really be part of the kernel. It doesn't make sense. So what we did was we implemented something called kernel hooks. So we just put in those hooks in the kernel, and we had the rest of the DPROBE as a module. What we did instead actually for 2.5 is that we have an abstraction of the core probing mechanism. All these problems that I was talking about, the basic probe mechanism itself abstracted into a small patch, which is something like 400 lines of code as the K-probes patch. And this does something where this is how it looks like. So this is how you can specify probe point. You have a struct K-probe where you specify the address of the probe, and you just say what is the callback function that should be called when that probe hits. And we have optional things where you can specify a post handler and you can specify a fault handler. The post handler will be executed after the instruction, probe instruction completes, and the fault handler would be called if the probe instruction faults. So it's just as simple as that, that you go and just, this is an example of how it, you can use it. You just use an interface called register K probe to say that register a K probe with the K probe's facility, and you use, once you register a probe, then whenever that address is executed, whenever the address is executed, then a probe hit will happen, and this callback routine would be called. So this is just a sample, very simple or trivial example here. So I put a probe at an address, which is beginning of do fork, and you specified a callback function, and all the callback function does is that it count is a global variable here, and it just increments, it just basically counts how many times do fork is called. And just to illustrate how it could be used. Now, once the core mechanism is there, and this has this core approach patch actually takes care of all those problems, all the locking, serialization issues, recursion, zombie breakpoints, all of those things in there. So it's essentially a core breakpointing mechanism. It's an automated breakpointing mechanism. It could potentially even use it for implementing a kernel debugger if we choose to, because it's a less stricter locking mechanism, you see. And then the next set of things that we did was we extended this to support watchpoint probes. This is making use of the hardware debug registers. And in order to do that, we first had a patch which we call debug register management patch, which enables multiple facilities to share debug registers, both user level programs as well as kernel facilities. And on that basis of that, we added an extension called watchpoint probe. And then we have an extension for user space probe as well, which actually enables somebody to implement user space probe. And then the idea was that we could build the full DPROS driver as an external module, and which could have much of the earlier function, but yeah. Yeah, in GDPC, probably GDPC would be an example. It's on user space code, and what will happen is that it will be active in all instances of GDPC. And that's the global nature of it. So this is what we've submitted to Linus, the core KPROS patch, but this is what we have proposed for inclusion in 2.5. Linus hasn't accepted it yet. So, watchpoint probes, I think I've said most of the things that you're using hardware watchpoint registers, so it can be, you can specify that it should be fired on, say, a specific type of access, execute, read, write, or even for IO addresses as such. And this is specified by virtual address, so it is active in all contexts. So supposing you specify a watch point on, say, which is actually a user space address, and it will end up hitting in all process contexts. But typically, you would use it for monitoring kernel data structures. But the problem over here, as you say, is that you have very few debug registers. And one of the things that we did, as I was saying, was the debug register allocation patch. These watch points, again, are global in nature. So if you put a watch point in kernel space, you want it to be active across all process contexts. Now, Linux today, it saves and restores the breakpoint registers on a context switch. So what happens is that if we put to maintain watchpoint probes, we really need to modify that logic so that it doesn't overwrite global watchpoints at that point of time. So what we do in the debug register allocation patch is that if it's for user space, then we start the allocation from 0 onwards, and for kernel space, we start from 4 onwards. But still, it's really very few registers. So one of the other areas that is a work in progress is the page points extension, where we try to make use of the paging mechanism to generate watch points. The problem with that, of course, is that of performance, because it means that every time you try to execute, you hit the page with a watch point on it, then every time you're generating a page fault and going through that. Yeah? Oh, okay. Okay, so user space probes. User space probes, we are, as I was saying, they're system-wide global. They don't cause a copy on write of the page, because they're all global in nature, and we go and actually insert the probe in the physical page, which is being shared by all processes. Other thing that we do is that we don't really, in order to do this, we don't really pin the memory. We don't force the pages in. What we do is that when the page is loaded in memory, then the probe is put in place. And you can do that by, intercepting the read page address space operation. So the user space, uprobes patch actually provides just the minimal support that you need to have user space probes. And the idea is the dprobes driver will build on the rest of the stuff to be able to. So this is the diagram that shows the whole picture that we have of the full dprobe implementation, which includes kernel space, user space, watch points, and what I was talking of, the RPN command interpreter, and the dprobes user space command. One of the neat things about dprobes is, as I was saying, is that you can invoke other RAS facilities from it. So you can invoke, say, dump or kernel debugger, or you can invoke a logging demand. And when you're invoking a logging demand, we do that after the single stepping is completed. So that is the time when we actually commit the log, so that you don't have multiple trace records for the same instruction being hit, going through multiple exceptions. The RPN command interpreter is really just RPN language is just a simple is a probe language, which is more assembly-like. So what we did was we wrote C compiler, which I will. Okay, this is just an example of the kind of external facilities we might have. You might even log to serial port, you might log to LTT, you might log to syslog. And if you're dealing with user space probes, you might want to cause a code dump conditionally. Part of the probe handler. I skipped the RPN interpreter as such. And so what I was saying is about the high-level language compiler is that because RPN was, we learned that RPN was a very complicated thing for people to use. And what we have is that there's a high-level language compiler in which you can write probes. And this is how it would look like if you were using that. We're doing essentially something similar to what we did there, but here you specify the probe point using the pragma statements, and then in the probe, the neat thing is that in the probe handler program, you can actually use it to log local variables within that function. And if you think about it, you'll see that it's not something very easy to do. I'll probably skip the next few slides because we'll talk more about the employment of dprobes and kind of close with that. Okay. Now, one of the usages of dprobes or kprobes is neat CSS-based driver that Rusty Lynch has written. So what he's done is that he's implemented a driver which makes use of kernel probes to do dynamic print case. So if you want a print to see a printk message whenever a given kernel address executes, you just make use of this and you specify the address and you specify the message that you want printed at that point of time. And you add this to the sysnoisy CPL file. Now similarly, you can even remove dynamic printcase. Now, I looked around for field problems which had been solved with using dprobes in OS2 because it's not been around that long enough on Linux for it to have been used. For that kind of deep serviceability problems. And one of the examples, and it turns out that those examples itself, they take like maybe a couple hours for the person to relate how they actually went about resolving the problem. But to give you a feel, this is typically for situations where you have a very obscure relation between the cause and the symptom of the problem. For example, there was a problem in OS2 which turned out to be a bug in the paging system, but which manifested itself as a crash in the file system code. And it seemed like the file system code was buggy. But it actually turned out that there was a problem in the page manager where it was actually overwriting page tables with the wrong address at the time of context switch. So to solve this problem, they actually did this by putting a lot of probes, first in the file system manager, pinning and unpinning routines, then in the page manager, and then right within context switch as well. And all of this was possible to do on a production system, on a live production system. There are other problems, what you call the parcel bomb problems, where you have, for example, in a window manager, you have messages coming to it from any process. So the cause of the problem is not really in the process that is faulting, but in the process which has actually sent it a wrong message. So how do you catch that? So to do that, you essentially go and put a probe on the function which is actually posting the messages. And that is active in all process contexts. So you can actually catch all instances of that and then find out when it... And you can conditionally check for the particular value which is causing the problem. And it can be used for device driver and device interface bugs also. You can put probes and interrupt handlers. During development, as I was saying, it was not intended for use during development, but it is useful. We've even used deep probes to debug itself during some of the early stages. It's used for, it could be used for large-scale internal instrumentation. That is, you can go and put in lots of ad hoc probes at the time instead of recompiling and putting in print case. It can be used for fault injection. I think there was a reference to that in the previous talk. So you can actually go and, say, change the parameters of function or change the conditions that will cause an error path to be executed. So it can be used for testing and fault injection in that way. It can be used for debugging races and timing-sensitive problems where you cannot use an interactive debugger, where even a trash dump is not enough to let you know what is actually happening. It can also be used for ad hoc profiling, but it's only for custom kind of profiling situations. So it's just if you need to do a very quick profiling of a system, you might use it. But because of the breakpoint traps involved, it's not... that efficient. It's not a true. I wouldn't recommend it for use as a profiler beyond that kind of purpose. So the main piece of work that is remaining right now is completing the dprobes driver on 2.4.2.5 using kprobes. We are kind of waiting for. How things turns out in terms of kprobes, whether it, the kprobes patch goes into the kernel, and then based on that we decide what is the kind of breakup that we should have in terms of what will be in the kernel and what we keep within the module. The IS64 port is actually, it has been done, but it is under test right now. It's already there on IS32, 390, 390X, DPC, and DPC64. In order to solve that SMP probe misses window, we have the two possibilities in place. One is emulate more instructions. The other is try to single step the instruction out of place. That is, instead of at the location where it is, we copy it to a different location and try to single step it there. But that involves some amount of interpretation of the instructions, some amount of decoding of that, and quite a bit of that is architecture specific. So we're not 100% sure if we should go that way. Page points is another thing, again, which we need to research and see if we can do it in an optimal way. And then we also have had thoughts of init time probes to try and basically compile our dprobes application in with KLibc so that you can put in probes in early init code. And sampler probes is something which a requirement that came up for, that was more for profiling purposes, was to, instead of, to avoid the breakpoint and single step interrupt if we have a probe call to the probe event handler right within the timer interrupt handler. Again, that's something which I'm not sure whether how useful it will be. It will kind of depend on the demand for it. So, yeah, I was presenting this on behalf of the whole RAS team or whole PPROS team. These are the people and few people in the community whom we owe thanks to. And the website is out here, so you can probably look at it for more details. And there's a paper where you should find some more details. If you're interested in some of the other stuff like the RPN interpreter, then probably there's an older paper that we have, which there's a reference to in this paper. And I would one more website to go to is the System RAS website, where you have actually linked to all the RAS tools. Because as you see, the whole thing, it doesn't work in isolation. You typically have, you use the right RAS facility at the right time. You use them in kind of combination or concert to get to the bottom of a particular problem.